It is a sentence of this court that you be taken from here to place of execution, and there hanged by the neck until you are dead. May God have mercy upon your soul.
For the wild narrative which I am about to relate, I neither expect nor solicit belief. My immediate purpose is to place before the world plainly, succinctly, a series of mere household events. In their consequences, these events have terrified, have tortured, have destroyed me. Hereafter, perhaps, some intellect may be found which will reduce my phantasm to the commonplace. Some intellect more calm, more logical, and far less excitable than my own. For today, I would unburden my soul. For tomorrow, I die. From my infancy, I was noted for the docility and humanity of my disposition. My tenderness of heart was even so conspicuous as to make me the jest of my companions. I was especially fond of animals and was indulged by my parents with a great variety of pets. With these, I spent most of my time and never was so happy as when feeding and caressing them. There is something in the unselfish and self-sacrificing love of an animal which goes directly to the heart of him who has had frequent occasion to test the paltry friendship and gossamer fidelity of mere man. When I married, I was happy to find in my wife a disposition not uncongenial with my own, and she lost no opportunity of procuring pets of the most agreeable kind. We had...
birds, goldfish, a fine dog, rabbits, a small monkey.
And most especially...
surprise, dearest! Isn't he the loveliest creature?
Ow.
A cat.
This latter was a remarkably large and beautiful animal, entirely black and sagacious to an astonishing degree.
He's so intelligent, don't you find? I wonder...
My wife at heart was not a little tinctured with superstition.
I wonder at the ancient popular notion which regards all black cats as witches in disguise. Not that I believe it myself.
Pluto.
This was the cat's name.
Was my favorite pet, and I alone fed him and...
he attended me wherever I went about the house.
It was even with difficulty that I could prevent him from following me through the streets. Our friendship lasted in this manner for several years, during which my general temperament and character, through the instrumentality of the fiend, intemperance... had, I blush to confess it, experienced a radical alteration for the worse. I grew day by day more moody, more irritable.
Edgar. Dearest, what's the matter?
Now leave me alone.
But darling, please don't go out tonight. I worry so. The drink, it isn't good for you.
God damn you, you harridan, you harpy, you bore me. You disgust me, get out.
No, please.
I suffered myself to offer her personal violence. But for Pluto, I still retained sufficient regard to restrain me from maltreating him. But I made no scruple of maltreating the rabbits, the monkey, or even the dog, when by accident or through affection they came in my way. But my disease grew upon me. For what disease is like alcohol? And at length... even Pluto,
who is now becoming old and consequently somewhat peevish,
even Pluto began to experience the effects of my ill temper. Later that night, returning home, much intoxicated from one of my haunts about town, I fancied that the cat avoided my presence. I seized him when, in his fright at my violence,
he inflicted a slight wound upon my hand with his teeth.
The fury of a demon instantly possessed me. I knew myself no longer. My original soul seemed at once to take its flight from my body, and a more than fiendish malevolence, gin-nurtured, thrilled every fiber of my frame. I took from my waistcoat pocket a penknife, opened it, grasped the poor beast by the throat, and deliberately cut out one of its eyes from the socket.
Wow!
When reason returned with the morning, when I had slept off the fumes of the night's debauch, I experienced a sentiment half of horror, half of remorse for the crime of which I had been guilty. But it was, at best, a feeble and unequivocal feeling, and the soul remained untouched. I again plunged into excess and soon drowned in wine all memory of the deed. The cat slowly recovered. The socket of the lost eye presented a frightful appearance, and though he went about the house as usual, fled in extreme terror at my approach. I had so much of my old heart left as at first to be grieved by this evident dislike on the part of a creature
which had once so loved me.
But this feeling soon gave place to irritation. And then came, as if to my final and irrevocable overthrow, the spirit of perverseness. Of this spirit, philosophy takes no account. Yet I'm sure perverseness is one of the primitive impulses of the human heart. Who has not 100 times found himself committing a vile or silly action for no other reason than because he knows he should not? It was this unfathomable longing of the soul to vex itself, to offer violence to its own nature, to do wrong for the sake of wrong alone, that urged me to continue and finally to consummate the injury I had inflicted upon the unoffending brute. One morning, in cold blood, I slipped a noose about its neck and hung it to the limb of a tree, hung it with the tears streaming from my eyes and with the bitterest remorse at my heart, hung it because I knew
that it had loved me,
and because I felt it had given me no reason of offense, hung it because I knew that in so doing I would so jeopardize my immortal soul as to place it, if such a thing were possible, even beyond the reach of the infinite mercy of God. That very night.
Edgar! Edgar! Dearest, wake up!
What is it? What's the matter?
There's smoke!
Oh, God!
The bed curtains!
Fire! Fire!
Run! Try not to breathe! Just run!
Oh, my God! Where is Pluto?
Hurry, dear, please! Go! The stairs are burning!
There they are! Thank heaven!
The whole house was blazing. It was with great difficulty that my wife, a servant, and myself made our escape. The destruction was complete. My entire worldly wealth was swallowed up, and I resigned myself thenceforward to despair.
Our house in ruins. What will we do?
The walls had fallen in, excepting one, not very thick, which stood about the middle of the house, and against which had rested the head of our bed. The plastering had here, in great measure, resisted the action of the fire. About this wall, a dense crowd were collected, and many persons seemed to be examining a particular portion of it with very minute and eager attention.
Look at that.
How strange!
The marks on the plaster.
Yes, that black figure.
Why, it looks like...
as if graven in bas-relief upon the white surface with an accuracy truly marvelous.
The figure of a gigantic cat.
Heavens, there is a rope about the animal's neck.
I beheld this apparition, for I could scarcely regard it as less, and my wonder and my terror were extreme. For months I could not rid myself of the phantasm of the cat, and I went so far as to regret the loss of the animal. Looking about me among the vile haunts which I now habitually frequented for another pet of the same species and of somewhat similar appearance with which to supply its place.
One night, as I sat half stupefied in a den of more than infamy, my attention was suddenly drawn to some black object reposing atop one of the immense hogsheads of...
That's wrong, you idiot!
I had been looking steadily at the top of this barrel for some minutes. Why had I not sooner perceived the object thereupon? I approached it and touched it with my hand. Well, hello.
Hello.
Where did you come from? I see. Well, very well, then.
It was black and very large, fully as large as Pluto, and closely resembling him in every respect but one.
This cat had a large splotch of white, covering nearly the whole region of its breast.
How much will you take for this creature?
Doesn't belong to me, gentlemen.
Never seen the beast before.
Not mine. Take it if you care to.
As the denizens of the bar made no claim to it, and the animal evinced a disposition to accompany me, I permitted it to do so, occasionally stooping and patting it as I proceeded home.
Oh, Eddie, how wonderful of you. Thank you. Doesn't he remind you of dear old Pluto? Oh.
Though the beast became her immediate favorite, for my own part, I soon found a dislike to it arising within me. This was the reverse of what I had anticipated, but I know not how or why it was. Its evident fondness for myself rather disgusted and annoyed. A certain sense of shame in the remembrance of my former deed of cruelty prompted me to avoid the creature, and I came to look upon it with unutterable loathing, and to flee silently from its odious presence as from the breath of a pestilence. Adding to my hatred of the beast was a discovery that, like Pluto...
It also had been deprived of one of its eyes.
Poor thing. How sad.
My wife still possessed that humanity of feeling which had once been my distinguishing trait, a humanity of which I was now bereft. With my aversion to the creature's partiality for myself seemed to increase. It followed my footsteps, crouched beneath my chair, or covered me with its loathsome caresses. I would have it between my feet, and thus it would nearly throw me down, or fastening its long, sharp claws in my clothes, clamber in this manner to my breast. I longed to destroy it.
I do so love that mark of white upon his breast. Don't you agree, Eddie?
Eddie.
Dear? What's the matter?
Oh, horror! For the character of the mark of white hair, which constituted the sole visible difference between the strange beast and the one I had destroyed, this mark, originally very indefinite, had assumed a rigorous distinctness of outline. It was the representation of a hideous, of a ghastly thing, of the gallows. Now, indeed, I was wretched. I knew the blessing of rest no more. During the day, the creature left me no moment alone, and in the night, I started hourly from dreams of unutterable fear to find the hot breath of the thing upon my face. The feeble remnant of the good within me succumbed. Evil thoughts became my sole intimates. The darkest and most evil of thoughts, hatred of all things and of all mankind, I now blindly abandoned myself to sudden, frequent, and ungovernable outbursts of fury.
Edgar, I don't mean to intrude. What? Well...
What do you want?
Forgive me, I can see you're unwell.
For God's sake, what is it?
All right, well, I'm so sorry, but I'm not quite strong enough.
Just tell me what you want. Damn you!
Might you help me bring the coal up from the cellar?
Oh, very well, very well. Then will you let me be? As we descended into the cellar of the old building which our poverty compelled us to inhabit, the cat followed, nearly throwing me headlong. No. Damn it! No. This will fix you!
Edgar, for the love of God, put down the axe!
I'm going to rid myself of this monster once and for all.
Spare the poor beast! It means you no harm!
Let go of my arm, woman!
Please don't!
Let go, damn you! I withdrew my arm from her grasp and buried the axe in her brain. She fell dead upon the spot without a groan. I set myself forthwith and with entire deliberation to the task of concealing her body. I knew that I could not remove it from the house, either by day or night, without the risk of being observed by the neighbors. Many projects entered my mind, cutting the corpse into minute fragments and destroying them by fire, digging a grave for it in the floor in the cellar, casting it in the well in the yard. packing it in a box as if merchandise with the usual arrangements and so getting a porter to take it from the house. Finally, I hit upon it. Wall it up in the cellar, as the monks of the Middle Ages are recorded to have walled up their victims. In one of the walls was a void caused by a false fireplace that had been filled up and made to resemble the red of the cellar with a crowbar. I dislodged the bricks and deposited the body against the inner wall. Propped it in that position and relaid the whole structure as it originally stood, carefully plastering over the new brickwork so it could not be distinguished from the old. Now, to rid myself of the beast which had been the cause of so much wretchedness. But the crafty animal had been alarmed at the violence of my previous anger and had run off. A second day and a third day passed, and still my tormentor came not. I breathed as a free man. The monster had fled. My happiness was supreme. The guilt of my dark deed disturbed me but little. Some few inquiries were made, but nothing was discovered. I looked upon my future felicity as secured. Upon the fourth day of the assassination... Yes?
Good day, sir.
What is it?
Sorry to disturb.
Not at all. Sergeant, what may I do for you? I believe I've already answered all your questions.
Again, I apologize, sir, but we've a warrant to search the house one last time. Shouldn't take a moment.
Oh, of course.
Would you mind showing us about, sir?
Shall we begin in the cellar? I was secure in the inscrutability of my place of concealment. I quivered not in a muscle. My heart beat calmly as that of one who slumbers in innocence. Huh?
Nothing odd here, Sergeant.
Indeed. Well, sir, we are satisfied there is nothing of concern. Again, forgive the intrusion.
But the glee of my heart was too strong to be restrained. I burned through the mere frenzy of bravado to say, if but one word, by way of triumph. Gentlemen! I am delighted to have allayed your suspicions. I wish you all health. By the by, gentlemen, this is a very well-constructed house.
Yes, it seems so.
I may say an excellently well-constructed house.
You are fortunate in such a house, sir. Well, we will see ourselves out.
These walls, are you going, gentlemen? These walls are solidly put together here, you see?
What the devil?
May God shield and deliver me from the fangs of the arch fiend.
Mercy on us. What is that?
Whatever it is, it's behind that wall. Pull it down.
Look, this plaster is fresh. See how easily it comes apart?
The horror! That cry, like the cry of a sobbing child, yet utterly anomalous and inhuman. A howl such as might have arisen only out of hell, conjointly from the throats of the damned in their agony and of the demons that exult in their damnation.
Sir, are you ill?
God defend us!
The corpse, already greatly decayed and clotted with gore, stood erect before us. Upon its head, with red extended mouth and solitary eye of fire, sat the hideous beast whose craft had seduced me into murder, and whose informing voice had consigned me to the hangman. I had walled up the monster within the tomb.
This episode was recorded at West of Lennon on October 10, 2011. It was engineered by Christopher Stewart and mixed by Dave Pascal and Rob Whitmer. You can subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, and we have a great website, too. Visit us online at thesandboxac.org.